February 7th, 2014 marked the 50th anniversary of the first visit by the Beatles to the United States of America. A musician, musicologist, professor, and chair of Skidmore's music department, Gordon Thompson, has been studying British popular music in general, and the Beatles in particular, for more than two decades. His book, Please Please Me, 60s British Pop Inside Out, brought a fresh take on a well-known subject through interviews with artists and repertoire managers, music directors, recording engineers, songwriters, and session musicians active in London in that decade. He's also published articles on the evolution of the song Strawberry Fields Forever, the censorship of the song A Day in the Life, and the role of memory in relationship to the recording While My Guitar Gently Weeps. In addition, he has lectured on the rise of Beatlemania and the role of New York in the Beatles' American success, which he will be doing in our region in the days and weeks to come. Gordon Thompson, it is a great pleasure to have you with us once again.
Hey, it's fun to be here.
I love having you here.
Yeah, it's great.
As I mentioned to you as you walked in, I've been looking forward to this for all week to talk to you because I just find this subject so fascinating because people love talking about it. It is just something that is really exciting, whether you were alive 50 years ago or not.
Right. I mean, it's one of the fun things as I've been going around and doing these lectures in connection with The Egg is that all of these people come with their memories. They have these memories of watching the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show on that right. February 9th date. They have memories of things, you know, they've collected. I had a great experience the other day in Clifton Park. I did a lecture. This woman stood up in the middle of it, and she had photographs. During the middle of the Q&A, had photographs she had taken of the TV set the night the Beatles were on the Ed Sullivan Show.
That's so cool.
And then she came up to me afterwards and she said, do you think the Beatles ever got a chance to meet Ellie Greenwich, who was a great songwriter associated with the Brill Building, along with Carole King and a bunch of others? And I said, well, you know, Lennon and McCartney really loved the songwriters of that style. And she says, well, I was just wondering, because when I met John, I met him at Ellie Greenwich's mother's house. And I was saying, whoa, stop. When was this? And she says, oh, the summer of 1964 in Levittown. She's listening. I don't know. But, you know, and then she reaches into her pocket and I got his autograph. Do you think it's worth it? I think, you know, people have these memories.
That is what we call in the journalism business, burying the lead. Yeah. just for the record. You have been, let's just clarify what exactly you're doing. You're doing these wonderful lectures. You're going to be in Glens Falls tonight. You'll be at Bethlehem Library tomorrow. The name of the lectures that you'll be doing, She Loves You, The Beatles, and New York. This is all part of this series that The Egg put together, and it's a really exciting series that culminates on Saturday night with the Fab Four, and Will Lee will be with us later to talk about that.
Oh, great. Will Lee is a great musician. Actually, yeah. I have to put this plug in for the Fab Four. They are a fantastic band. I've heard them a couple of times. They're the band on Saturday night. Man, they are so good.
Yeah. Good, really good stuff. So how did all of this come to be to celebrate the anniversary and to
well,
work with the Egg?
Obviously, it's the 50th anniversary. And I did something for the Egg a couple of years ago when they did a showing of Nowhere Boy and brought in the Quarrymen, John Lennon's skiffle band, or at least the remaining members of it. And I did a Q&A with them at that point. And so Peter Lesser at the Egg called me up this last summer and said, hey, you know, we're thinking about doing this series to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Beatles arriving in New York. Would you put together a lecture that would kind of talk about that special relationship? And so that's what I've been doing. I've been doing this talk. And it's fun because I get to kind of experience the excitement that the basically baby boomers have. Last night in Saratoga Springs, I asked how many folks in this room. There was about 130 people in this room, right? I asked how many of you watched that February 9th program, and about, you know, four-fifths of that room put up their hands, you know. And I keep telling them, it's a bit like the mountain in Close Encounters of a Third Kind, right? the people who want to go there don't know why they have to be there. They just know they have to be there. And doing these lectures, I don't think they're showing up necessarily to hear me. I think they're showing up to share that experience.
What I have found fascinating, and it's seeing over the last, I guess in June of last year, I got to see Paul McCartney. And the way the music affects people is amazing to me.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's the same thing, I think, what you're talking about, of how, because that's different than just a fan going to a concert of and listening to a song that they know. This is a very visceral, changing, I mean, something that goes to their very core that I find fascinating.
Well, one of the things the Beatles did, one of the reasons the Beatles were so successful is they came upon us at a particularly critical point in American history. With the assassination of John Kennedy and the fall of 1963, there was this pall hanging over our society. And the Beatles come along at this critical point and say, hey, you know, the world isn't quite so dark. The future is bright. It's going to be fun. And the other thing they did was they kind of articulated there is this social presence that was that baby boom generation, that we had an identity and it was different from our parents' identity. And that baby boom generation is just turning 14, 15, 16. They're starting to find themselves, and the Beatles helped us find ourselves.
What was it you're going to be talking about, specifically the relationship to New York, which was just one stop of their tour? And yet a very, very important stop.
Well, there's the entry point, which obviously the main transatlantic flight routes were going to bring them into New York.
Right.
And, of course, the media. If you're going to make it anywhere, you got to come to New York to get into the media mainstream. Elvis had discovered that on the Ed Sullivan Show. So had Buddy Holly. This was the place you had to be. New York was where you had to be if you were going to get into the American mainstream consciousness. So there was all of that there. Plus, it's just that vibration of there. New Yorkers recognized early on that the Beatles were important. Ed Sullivan signed the Beatles, actually first experienced them on the 31st of October 1963, when their airplane arrived back from Sweden, and he stuck on his flight. He can't get off because fans have invaded the airport, and he can't get off his plane. Yeah. About a week later, he's negotiating contract with Brian Epstein to appear on his shows in February. That's one New Yorker who kind of recognized it. And then there's Sid Bernstein, who arranges first of all, the Carnegie Hall appearances that the Beatles make in February of 1963, and then subsequent appearances such as, of course, Shea Stadium. There's New Yorkers who just seem to recognize something special about the Beatles. And then the Beatles themselves. Of course, John Lennon came to live in New York.
Right.
Paul McCartney has married a couple of New Yorkers. There is that special relationship.
It is. You have a built-in audience. I mean, that's the thing that's fascinating, of not just a television audience, but there were people just mopping the streets to see these four men.
Yeah. I mean, it's phenomenal. Well, that, then and still.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's just a bizarre phenomenon in some ways that an act that only was actually alive and functioning fully for about 6 or 7 years as recording artists and then ended is still so important. In some ways, I haven't said this in the lectures, but in some ways it's good. People lament that the band broke up in 1970. But in some ways, it's actually, I think, helped them to survive as a cultural icon, that they knew when to give it up and move on to something else.
Mm.
I'm not saying the Rolling Stones haven't figured out what to do, but I think the Beatles, by calling it quits at that particular point as an ensemble, cemented their historic relationship.
Does it speak to the quality that the group had insisted on from the very beginning?
Yeah, I would think so. This is a band that, you know, one of the things they did that Elvis didn't do, because that parallel often comes up. Elvis had been on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Right.
He had been this great phenomenon. But then Elvis went into these films and he adopted this personality that was very contrite and polite and kind of avoided his background. The Beatles never really lost that background. They always came across as honest, sincere, and there's one news reporter at the time called them non-heroes. They didn't see themselves as heroes or special. They saw themselves as just people coming into this wonderful environment. They were going to have fun forever, how long it lasted. They were always direct and sincere.
There's the pop culture side to this, of course, and yet, speaking to you as a professor of music and a musicologist, they didn't really have, like, you can't point to one album and say, oh God, that was awful. I mean, there was a consistency there.
Right, right. Well, this is a band. These are musicians who were always trying to figure out what the next big thing was going to be. Yeah. And usually it turned out to be them. But, you know, they were always, you know, they, for early on, it was Motown. They were early on figured out, oh, we love this Motown stuff. So their second British album with the Beatles has all these Motown tunes on it. And You Really Got a Hold on Me, Please, Mr. Postman, Money, right? So they got that. A little later, it's Bob Dylan, right? And that, so they Bob Dylan becomes a huge inspiration for them. And then it's soul music, Sam and Dave, you know, point out, you know, there are rehearsal tapes you can hear of the Beatles where they're working through Sam and Dave's Hold On, I'm Coming, you know, just trying to figure out how this stuff works. And then a little while later, you hear those same chord progression, that same chord progression, but kind of tucked into Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. They've taken this material from us, absorbed it, and then figured out how to make it different and give it back to us. They're like this great mirror that said, wow, there's all this great American music. Let's internalize it and we'll give it back to you. And we really liked what that reflection said about us. Mm. It was refreshing.
And it was a worldwide phenomenon.
Well, pretty much worldwide. I mean, I have another persona I'm actually what's called an ethnomusicologist.
Yes, yes.
So India is another big part of my life. And although the Beatles had a minor impact in India,
yeah,
globally, you could say not so. But in the Western world, yes, the Beatles came and changed very much the way that we think about pop culture in the Western world. Whether we're, you know, they led us through conversations about violence in the streets. You think about, you know, revolution and its rejection of violence. Think about, you know, the idea of peace as an idea that we can pursue. The rebellion against parents. All of these things, the Beatles kind of led us through those conversations. They were very powerful as a cultural icon.
Talk about a little bit about the relationship between the four men and the ability to be on the same page musically and to create something and to be, as you referred to, as that next big thing.
Yeah, man, this is a band that really kind of figured out how to work together even when they had disagreements.
Right.
And as we get later into their career as a band, there's lots of disagreements, but yeah, they usually found ways to make it work. You start off with Lennon and McCartney working out how to work out a song and to agree that ultimately the idea was to come up with a great song. And then how to come up with a great recording. Both Lennon and McCartney, for example, talk about the composition of the song I Want to Hold Your Hand, and how they were literally sitting at a piano side by side, you know, working through the chords. And then when McCartney would hit a chord, Lennon would say, "That's it, do that again," right? And then working through that moment, you know, they described it as writing eyeball to eyeball. Mm-hmm. And then bringing that idea to the studio, where Harrison and Starr are going to be there, and everybody collaborates to make that a great performance and a great recording. They really knew how to work as a team. And it continues through the 60s. You mentioned the While My Guitar Gently Weeps. It's a wonderful story, very bizarre in some ways, but, you know, this is a song that George Harrison writes, brings it in, and at first it's kind of an acoustic piece, and gradually it begins to evolve. He can't quite get the band's attention on it, and so he brings in Eric Clapton, right, to play guitar solo on it. And that somehow helps to transform that performance. Always was this idea that we're going to do what's going to be best for the recording rather than what's going to be best for me.
And I was fascinated by this. I just heard an interview recently with Paul McCartney that he did, a lengthy interview that he did with Howard Stern, and they were talking about at points where someone like Yoko would come into the studio and they would be upset by that, and McCartney was asked, well, did that affect, did you say, all right, well, we're not going to do this? And he said, no, we never did anything that would impact the music.
Right. The music was always ultimately important.
We can put anything else aside. We weren't going to screw up the music.
Right. I mean, and there's telling moments about that, too. If you think about when they do the Ballad of John and Yoko,
Yeah. That's
just John and Paul in the studio. Just the two of them. I mean, the other two are gone off somewhere else. John wanted to record that immediately. This is, you know, yeah, Yoko's around, Linda's around, but they say, hey, we want to make this recording. We want to make it right now. They can put aside all that other stuff, block it all out. Let's just create a great recording.
How pure do you think the legacy will be?
Ooh. Well, it's going to last a long time. I think there's evidence of that. One of the things that's great about being a college professor is I get to see I've gotten to see over the 26 years I've been at Skidmore, different generations of students who come in with a love of this music. And they get it from their parents, or now I'm starting to get it from their grandparents.
Right.
It's kind of a music that keeps getting new audiences. I was having a conversation with someone recently about how does this work with the Rolling Stones, for example. And some of my students will say, well, you know, my dad's a Rolling Stones fan, but I never, you know, they're a bunch of old guys making rock and roll, and it's fun, but, you know, it's okay. But as I said earlier, the Beatles decided at one point to say, well, that's it as that band, which is not to say, I mean, I saw Paul McCartney performance in Detroit a couple of years ago. That was just phenomenal.
He's
such a great musician,
amazing.
Showman.
Absolutely amazing. And again, it's just watching the people and how they react is so incredible. Gordon Thompson will be giving his She Loves You, The Beatles in New York lecture tonight at the Crandall Library in Glens Falls. And then the roadshow continues. He'll be at the Bethlehem Library on Thursday night. He'll discuss the rise of Beatlemania at Union College on February 24th. We have information on our website at wamc.org. Gordon Thompson, always a pleasure to have you come in.
Thanks,
Thank
Joe.
Thank you so much. Great treat. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.